This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right. Phone lines open, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Your shot here in a moment. Couple of other just quick observations from the 42-19 win over the Titans to get to 8-5. They tried one of those flea flickers again, hand the ball off to the running back, pitch back to Jaden. The last time, remember, the pitch was off and Jaden sort of corralled it. This time, I think the pitch was fine from McNichols back to Jaden, and Jaden just bobbled it, and that hurried him up a bit where he threw underneath to Noah Brown. I won't know, and no one will until you see the All-22 if whatever they were looking for on that play was open. They lined up. It looked like perhaps trying to take a shot to somebody short, or it may have been another one of those, you know, quick screens. But anyway, that was one of the other observations from the game. On the fumbled kickoff return that Tennessee had, there was an illegal block on Tennessee. Pollard fumbled. On Tennessee's fumble, not the kickoff return, when Pollard fumbled, there was a brutal face mask that they just flat out missed. And they called a penalty on Tennessee. So that turnover probably shouldn't have happened. And then there was a 3rd-and-2 on Washington's 5th drive in the first half, and they didn't reset the play clock. Then it looked like Washington wanted to take a timeout, but they didn't get it. And instead, Tennessee was called for 12 men in the huddle on defense. I think that's a bad call because Washington subbed with 15 seconds left on the play clock. That gives them, Tennessee, a chance to sub, and they call them for a 12-man on the field situation as they were subbing. I think Washington got a break with that one, although they, I think, would have gotten the timeout instead. All right, before we get to the phone lines at 301-230-0980, Denton, what were your big takeaways from the game?
Takeaway number one, he can play in the cold. I think that was answered yesterday. That was a big concern.
Was it really that cold? 42, sunny, no wind.
He hadn't played in that before. Didn't seem to be.
I think he played once in Utah at 39.
I mean, didn't seem to be much of an issue. He looked pretty good. Yeah. I love that him and Terry are developing a great rapport. I mean, Terry has 9 touchdown catches already. Yeah. At one point, you know, Jaden had thrown 14. Nine of them were to Terry. Now, he threw a 15th one to Zach Ertz. He's the only other guy, I think, that's caught two touchdown passes from Jaden. I thought it was really smart of Kliff to get Terry involved early. All the conversation this week was getting him involved, getting him on the right side. It was poetic that his first catch was on the right side.
Right.
His first touchdown, he had lined up on the right side, and he crossed the middle of the field.
Yeah, that was slot. Yeah.
The offense looked as good as it has looked. I mean, I would say since maybe the Cincinnati game was like, I felt like the peak where they just could not be stopped. The difference is they did it against a good defensive team in Tennessee. I mean, I didn't see Jeffrey Simmons outside of when he was trying to fight Sam Cosmi or when he was making tackles down the field. And if your defensive tackle is making tackles down the field, it means you're going down the field on offense, which is very, very positive. I'm still a little shaky on the defense. I mean, the Titans, I mean, God almighty, Will Levis is not good. There were guys dropping passes left, right, and center, it felt like. So I'm a little shaky on the defensive backfield. Hopefully when Marshawn Lattimore returns, or I should say arrives for the first time in uniform, that'll shift a little bit. But offensively, they were as strong as we've seen them in a long, long time.
Yeah, they really were. Terry's touchdown was really, it was the right side, but it was in the slot. Which, remember, you know, we saw Terry with Scott Turner in particular used a lot in the slot. That's where you can get some true mismatches with Terry and get him away from the star corner. And look, there was a mix of everything defensively from Tennessee, and nothing worked. I mean, they started walking somebody into the box at one point. That didn't work. Really good point on Simmons. He's on the stat sheet, but you could see they frustrated him. There were a lot of double teams. There were a lot of second level blocking. I'd love to see how many snaps they ran from 12 personnel, because it seemed like Ertz and Bates were in the game for almost, you know, at the same time for a lot of the game. And, you know, Bates is an excellent blocker. You know, they've got good blocking out of their tight ends. Yeah, I mean, it felt good. So you think that's the best offensive performance since Cincinnati? The Cardinals game and the Browns games and the Giants game second go around were pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to choose from is the best, yeah. But I think considering who they were playing, and like right from the jump, when Brian Robinson took that run 40 yards, you know, home run to me, that I thought was like, all right, this team is focused. Because they did that by the interior sealing off Tavondre Sweat, Jeffrey Simmons, and then he was gone at that point. They just came in with a sense of urgency that I don't think I've seen them have in a long time.
Yeah, and don't we have to give Quinn and the staff some credit for that. You know, I mean, we talked about really after the Pittsburgh and Philadelphia games, because those are two legitimate losses. And look, the better team in Philadelphia on a short week won the football game, even though Washington did have a lead into the fourth quarter. The Dallas game was the one where we all had to question what we had seen in the first nine games, and justifiably so. But this group going into this bye week after a 13-week long, you know, big time, you know, season in which there's a lot going on over those first 13 games. They finally get to their bye week, and I thought they were ready, like you said. They were ready both sides of the ball. Defensively, swarming. Yeah, big. I mean, it's nice to take the first drive and go, quick throw for 10, quick throw for 10, and the 40-yard touchdown run on your third play. Three plays, 59 yards. You are in the end zone at 7-0. And Tennessee, we talked about this last week, they have really served up so many opportunities for their opponents this year, and they did it again yesterday. All right, your turn. What'd you like? What didn't you like? Phone lines are now open at 301-230-0980. Let's start with Joe in Springfield. Joe, have at it.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Good, Joe.
All right, let me start with my like, didn't like, and side notes. First is Terry McLaurin. You know, Kevin, when he had that 86-yard touchdown against Dallas last week, you noticed that he was on the right side of the field. You noticed yesterday they rotated him back and forth, left side, right side, and it mixed it up a bit. And that's what, I mean, Terry didn't really say anything about it, but you could tell that he likes doing that more, and they've adjusted to that. The offensive line, Kevin, I've gone back and looked at this. This is now the fifth time this season that we have the offensive line has paved the way for over 200 yards rushing for the season. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, and give the offensive line credit. I understand they went toe-to-toe with Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. They have the offensive line has been a plus this whole season. I mean, there have been some flaws here and there, but they have definitely deserve a lot of credit for what they've done. The defense had a good afternoon. Frankie Louvin, Bobby Wagner, I mean, I praise them every week. I mean, they're always over after the ball. The kicking woes, Kevin, which I didn't like, continue. I mean, I understand there were two, like a 40-plus and 50-plus yard field goals, but and luckily we made all six extra points. But, I mean, that first field goal miss kind of got Tennessee back into the game to make it a two-score game, but other than, I mean, it was kind of already out of reach for them. And the side note, we're 8-5 going to the bye week. Nobody expected us, I mean, back in March or April, even in the preseason, that we would be this good. And things are looking up. We got tough tests coming up against the Saints, rematch against the Eagles, hosting the Falcons, a rematch against Dallas. But who knows what happens from here on out. And Dan Quinn, Cliff Kingsbury, and Joe Wood Jr., give them credit. I mean, we definitely were getting criticized after the last couple of weeks, but they responded. And I think that Dallas loss definitely got them frustrated. So we'll see what happens after the bye week. But take care, Kevin.
Thanks, Joe in Springfield. Yeah, I mean, I think, again, just to emphasize, for me, they won a football game. That was huge. But they looked good doing it. Like, we talked last week, and I think I said at one point, look, you just have to win. I don't care if it's 12-10. You just have to get to 8-5 and get to this bye week and kind of regroup. Because I was concerned. You know, Denton and I talked all last week. Tennessee was only a 5.5, 6-point underdog versus what they had been favored by over Dallas for a reason. And that reason was they had been an outstanding defensive team pretty much all season long. They just turned their offense just turned the ball over too much. And yesterday you got the mistakes, you got the drop passes, you got the turnovers. I mean, they had 11 penalties for 85 yards in a half. So they're a self-destructive team, but you buried them for that. And you did it with outstanding offense. The defense was great, too. I don't want to minimize the defense as if it didn't play an outstanding game. Both sides of the ball were outstanding. They were ready for this game. And it just feels so much better going into this bye week, 8-5, but having the most recent feeling being what the first nine games or what eight of the first nine games were, which is, wow, this offense can be unstoppable at times. Let's go to Frank in Charlotte. We do have a line open, 301-230-0980. If you want to jump on, Frank, go ahead.
Hey, good morning or good afternoon, Kevin. Hey, great game yesterday. Hey, how you doing? Well, what I did like was Terry, of course. That's the obvious thing, and we're not going to go into that. He was outstanding as usual. J.D., of course, we're not going to go into him. He was outstanding as usual. But what I really liked was the line, their combo blocks, the way it was reaching the second level. I mean, it was completely different from the Dallas game. We were getting blown up in the Dallas game. And another thing I like was Lucas at right tackle.
Yeah.
I don't know why that offensive line coach, play your best five. Wiley is not one of your best five. Lucas is your best five. So you have to play your best five, okay, to keep it moving.
I think Wiley's been pretty good in the run game, Frank. I really do. I think Wiley's been a really good run blocker for them this year.
Yeah, but his pass pro, he's on skates a lot. He's on roller skates a lot, and he gives up the inside shoulder a lot, and he gets beat on speed rushes. So, but yeah, he is good. He is good in the run game. Yes. Also,
Luvu. Yeah.
He was outstanding. Luvu. Yes. And Mr. Sandstrill, he was outstanding. And the one thing I want to see from Kingsbury, I'm going to say he was okay. I'm not going to say I liked it. I'm just going to say he was okay because I need to see more consistency. I don't want to see that laziness he had the last three games as far as not moving Terry around, keeping him on one side, you know, not moving to the X or to the Y, to the Z position. I need to see more consistency of that. It shouldn't take national media, you know, to call him out or fans to call him out that Terry needs to be moved. He should be able to see that on film. He should have seen that on film back in the Pittsburgh game. So also what I didn't like that penalty on Cosby. I thought that was
Jeffrey Simmons, good point.
I thought that was that was Jeffrey Simmons. Cosme didn't do nothing, but Cosme gonna stand up for himself. You know what I'm saying? So, but I didn't like that penalty at all, and that's pretty much it. I thought it was a really great game. And one more thing I didn't like. I didn't like that Luke and Sennett are not getting enough snaps. Now I like Ertz. He's okay. He's the type. He's gonna catch and fall down. No yak. But in college, Sennett was known as the yak king for his tight ends. And he needs to get more playing time. And it's as simple as that. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Appreciate it. You know, there's been a lot made of where Terry lines up. I am not as worked up over all of this as many of you as you are. I think, I don't know who it was that wrote the story last week. It may have been Nikki or Sam with the Washington Post. And basically, McLaurin, you know, led the league in lining up on the left side. And we saw his first catch on the right side. We saw the touchdown, the one that he caught from the slot be right of the center position. They were the best. They were arguably the best offense in the league over the first nine games with Terry lining up consistently on the left side. I think it's probably an overrated issue. I really do. Again, I would point to the opponents that they faced as much as anything else for their downturn. Now, the Dallas result was an outlier. It was a dud. There's no doubt about it. But if there is benefit, and we know there's benefit to moving a really good receiver, especially one that plays on a team without a really obvious solid number two, you know, that is legitimate, and that'll be a need in the offseason. There's some benefit to motion. There's a benefit to moving them around formationally. They were top two or three offensive team over the first nine games with him lining up exclusively or almost exclusively on the left-hand side. I'd have to go back and look at the snaps. He's still lined up on the left side a bunch. The touchdown on the slant was a left side slant. He had a couple of left side slants and a couple of zone, stops where he was hit, on the left side. And, over one layer and in front of another. So I know we talk about it, and, a lot of people really get worked up over it. Cliff Kingsbury may have decided this was the week to move him around. I don't know why. Maybe it's the defense. But I would be surprised if, all of a sudden Terry's split in where he lines up moving forward. All right, more of your calls when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Terry McLaurin, excited to get moved around a little bit more. Keep in mind, Terry is third in the league in reception yardage. So it's not like what they were doing before wasn't working. Also, understood, the last couple of games wasn't as productive with the exception of the 86-yard touchdown pass. Actually, had a very good game against Pittsburgh. Last week against a Dallas team that had been struggling, obviously, he had one big play, and that was it. Whatever they need to do. Teams evolve, they change, they mix it up, they self-scout, especially during a bye week, come out with different things. It's just nice that after a tough three-game stretch, which teams do have, good teams do, really good teams sometimes have tough stretches, that they came out and not only won the game yesterday, but won it impressively, scoring 42 points and taking their foot off the pedal a little bit towards the end. Keep in mind, make two field goals, and it's a 48-point output. in that game yesterday. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Your calls. Ben will join us at noon. We've got some Dan Quinn sound to play from the game, some Jaden Daniels sound to play from the game as well. But let's go to Ron. Ron is on hold. Ron, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make two observations. One is that De'Ami Brown needs to be on the field a lot more. He's got speed. He can move and he can catch. And he's
agreed.
Made some difficult catches as well. He's not like Terry, but he's better than the Noah Brown. The next observation is at running back. I don't know what's going on with Chris Rodriguez, but me and a buddy of mine, every week for those 3 weeks that we had losses, we were wondering, where is Chris Rodriguez? This guy, he's a tow truck. And for his stature, he's, to me, if Brian Robinson has to leave the game, he should be the first go-to guy. Rodriguez has shown that since since last year, I guess when he was drafted as a rookie. He's got some really good skills. Maybe there's a personnel problem because I heard he was cut and then they brought him back. I mean, I don't know why you would cut this guy. I would have let Forbes go a long time ago and kept this guy in his place. But those are the only two. And, you know, I want to say the guys look real good. Jaden looked like he was pretty much himself where the last 3 weeks he really did not. Even against Dallas, he didn't appear to be totally over that. You know, his injury from his ribs, but he sure looked good yesterday. Thanks. That's all I got, Kevin. Have
yeah, good stuff. I mean, on the last point, Jaden was outstanding last week as a runner. So looked really, really good last week as well. I think I'm totally with you on De'Ami Brown and Chris Rodriguez, and I mentioned that in my game take. There's no doubt that we've noticed more and more De'Ami Brown becoming a part of what they like to do, first of all, with him in some of the jet sweeps, some of the reverse stuff, definitely in the quick bubble stuff. They like him with the ball in his hands. He's incredibly fast. He's got real good burst, stop-start burst. He's got good quickness. And I'm looking at, because I just pulled up for the first time, the snap counts. Because now Noah Brown went out, so there is that. But yeah, he played more snaps than any other receiver in the game yesterday other than Terry. Part of that is Noah Brown getting banged up. But still, you can sense that they're getting more confident and that they feel like De'Ami Brown is a weapon that they should be using more of. And I agree with you on that. I've always felt this way about Chris Rodriguez. There was clearly something else going on with Rodriguez, and we don't need to speculate whatever. The bottom line is, on the field, he's a really good runner, as he was, by the way, in college at Kentucky. You know, a lot of people thought he would go well before. What was he taken in, fifth, sixth round by Washington? A lot of people had a third, fourth round grade on Rodriguez. He's an excellent runner. He's an excellent vision in between the tackles runner. And then he's big and strong. You know, he's got to be close to 225, 230. And he runs that way. I like him too. I actually like what McNichols has given them this year. And let me just take that opportunity to point out that Eckler's going to be missed here. He went on injured reserve, if you didn't know this. On Saturday, they cut Emmanuel Forbes. We'll have time to get into that hopefully today. They put Austin on IR. That's four games. So I guess the earliest he could be back is the Atlanta or the Dallas game. They're going to miss him. Eckler's been a massive factor for this team as a pass catcher, as a runner, as a kickoff returner. You know, we saw that yesterday. McNichols was not great in the kickoff return area against a team that really has given up kick and punt return yards all season long. But good call. Appreciate that, Ron. Let's go to Ryland, our favorite Canadian. Ryland, go ahead.
Good morning, boys. Good to talk to you, fellas. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving down
here.
It was just an impressive win. I loved getting Terry involved early and often, and I just love when the offense runs through him. And moving him around was clearly a good move by Cliff, and I hope he continues to do so. And I think just getting rested and then getting back with Lattimore on after the bye, I think it's going to be exciting. But let's just make sure we take care of business on those two of the four games that we need to win and then see what happens. But I think we got some good momentum coming off this win. People are back. The fans are back. We're back. I'm heading to Vancouver on Wednesday. I'll be wearing my Skins jacket, you know, all day. For the whole week in Vancouver, we'll be sure to let the people know that the Skins are back, baby. So hope you guys are doing well, and good talking to you, boys. Take care. Hail to the Skins.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. You know, one quick thing, by the way, just on De'Ami Brown, who I do think they're trying to work in. Noah Brown, just so everybody understands, Noah Brown gets excellent separation, which is one of the reasons Jaden has looked for Noah Brown a lot. You know, he's a bigger target. He's a guy that gets separation. You know, Noah Brown's had some drops. But I think Noah Brown's been, I think that was a key acquisition, you know, a key pickup that they made right before the regular season began, for sure. All right, let's go to Bones. Bones, go ahead.
Good morning, Kim. Shout out to my
What's
man.
What's up, Bones?
Today. Man, this team is okay, man. This team is going to be all right. We're going to win the four games, you know what I'm saying? De'Ami Brown, I've been saying this all along. He's the one that has the speed, you know what I'm saying? Put him in the mix. Chris Rodriguez, I've been shouting out for him all season. We all know why they keep on, you know, cutting him and bringing him back. But Chris Rodriguez going to put that work in. Kevin, we're back. I love you guys, man. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Kevin, I look good on them all. Saturday college football game. Thanks for taking my call. Peace.
Yeah, yeah. Well, been rolling on college, that's for sure. 3-1 on Saturday. I think that's like six straight college football weekend winners. After everybody remembered Denton early in the season, just don't give me your college picks anymore. I said, you just got to hang in there with them. They'll be fine. This from Luke. Rodriguez should be the second guy behind Brian Robinson Jr., not Eckler, not McNichols. I like Rodriguez as a runner. I really do. It's not the only part of the job. Just remember that. You know, Eckler, you know, look, he's out of the equation at least until the postseason or the very end of the regular season. And let's hope that these concussions... that he's healthy, first and foremost. He was a look, you could argue that after Jaden and Terry, Eckler was the third most valuable offensive player during that 9-game run to get to 7-2 to start the season. But I do like Rodriguez a lot. I think what you saw on display yesterday is you see a guy that has really good between the tackles vision and then quick feet and the quick juke to get to the spot where there's daylight. And then he's good after the catch. But what you don't, you know, what you have to consider is pass blocking. It's always a big deal with these running backs, right? It's what are they as a pass receiver and what are they in pass pro? Like, there was a time when we didn't consider sacks to be, you know, a quarterback sack. It was only an offensive line sack. No one else was really responsible. But backs are massively important in that game. And that's where I think Brian Robinson Jr. and Eckler are probably ahead of a guy like Rodriguez, who was young and, you know, who knows. But I liked Rodriguez. I like him a lot, too. I do. I think he is an excellent runner, a really good runner. By the way, this also from my buddy Luke, who just said, who tagged his Chris Rodriguez note to me with, "We just beat the Titans. Relax." Yeah, I understand. They're a 3-9 football team, and they're bad in terms of, you know, just beating themselves week in and week out or taking themselves out of games week in and week out with turnovers, with penalties, with really bad quarterback play overall. But offensively against their defense was legit coming in. Not Philly's, defense necessarily, not Pittsburgh's because of the complementary football that allows their defense to not be on the field the entire game like Tennessee's, but Tennessee was a good defensive football team, and to go into this bye with not just a win, but a really good feeling that offensively what we saw in the first nine games wasn't, you know, a fluke, wasn't, you know, a cliff, you know, early start setting up for, you know, fast fade, which, you know, we've debunked on this show and had Bill Barnwell on last week to completely eviscerate that narrative, especially about Cliff's offenses. That felt good. Like, I feel good now against the Saints, the Eagles, the Falcons, and the Cowboys. The Falcons and Cowboys are not good defensive teams. The Saints are okay. Philadelphia, ridiculous defensively. I mean, Minnesota or Philadelphia, right? Or Denver. Those are the three best defenses in the league, Denton?
After yesterday, yes. Statistically, Tennessee was two.
Tennessee was two in yards, but they were ninth DVOA. You know, that yards allowed is always kind of misleading. Like, Detroit, do you know that when Detroit beat them 52 to whatever it was, Detroit had like 220 yards of total offense because they didn't need to, right? So, because they had such a lead. But DVOA-wise, going into this weekend, Tennessee was nine. Right now, okay, updating DVOA, Minnesota, Detroit, Houston, Philly, Denver. Those are your top five. Tennessee dropped to 10th after getting Pittsburgh still. I mean, Washington has faced Philly, Pittsburgh, Tennessee among the best defenses in the league. The good news is the rest of the way, Atlanta's 25th, Dallas is 24th, and where are the Saints defensively? Because I think they're pretty decent. Nope, 27th ranked defensively per DVOA, New Orleans right now. All right, we've got some... Wait, you just wrote me a note. We've got PFF grades out from yesterday. We'll look at some of those. You'll hear some of what Quinn said, some of what Jaden said, and then Ben will join us at noon. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.
Big day for the Commanders yesterday. They snapped their three-game losing streak with a massive 42-19 win over the Tennessee Titans. Jaden went 25 of 30 for 206 yards, three touchdowns. Did have one interception, but he also ran for 34 yards on nine carries and a touchdown. Terry McLaurin caught two touchdowns. He has now set a new career high in single-season touchdown catches with nine. He's the first Commanders Washington football team Redskins wide receiver to catch nine touchdowns in a season since Santana Moss. The team also ran for 267 yards. It's the most they'd run for as a team since 2012, week 17, against Dallas when they ran for 274 yards. That, you'll remember, is when Alfred Morris had 200 yards. Elsewhere in the NFL, the Eagles beat the Ravens 24-19. Saquon Barkley ran for 107 yards and a touchdown. He became the first player to rush for over 100 yards against the Ravens this season. On Sunday Night Football, the Bills beat the 49ers 35-10. Josh Allen went 13-17 for 148 yards and two touchdown passes, one of which was to himself. He also got engaged to Haley Steinfeld last weekend. It's great to be Josh Allen right now. The Bills are 10-2, and that's what's trending.
Yeah, that one was kind of that RPO zone read where there's a zone read fake, but he's really looking to throw on the RPO to the outside. It wasn't open, and then he just created, man, and got it into the end zone. It's pretty good. I think Quinn calls it the second play within the play. There aren't that many that are better than him at the second part of the play. All right, I wanted to play a couple of quick sound bites from Dan Quinn, then we'll get to Ben Standing at noon. This is what he said on kind of the difference to Jaden Daniels having the first, you know, kind of big day he's had in about a month. Here's what he said.
What was it about Jaden today? He just looks so much like he did in the early part of the season. What was sort of the difference?
Yeah, I thought so too, Nikki. I have to think that there's probably a side of just the competitor who he is, like the innate, you know, talent, competitor, like all that goes into it. And then the next part of really going through all the practices, all the reps, and to see him do that, I thought that was a big deal. Even at week practice this week, we had big wins, and, you know, so we wanted to go into the win, not into the win, all the different ways, the things that we would do, and he just was kind of just ready for each of the challenges. But I think he was able to, you know, fully express himself today. The runs, keeping, you know, creating on the move, I would say all of those weren't the same play design when the second play begins and he some of his magic starts to take place. You know, that one's not in the book.
Yeah, there he is referring to that second part of the play. He went back to the practices and the reps and getting all the practices and the reps. Because remember, through that Philadelphia game, basically he had only had a full week of practice once, and that was heading in to the Pittsburgh game because they only had walkthroughs heading into the Philly game. So he had only practiced like three times in four games, you know, the Chicago game, the Giant game, the Pittsburgh game, the Philadelphia game. He did have a mini bye worth of practice time and reps heading in to the Dallas game, but look, he played pretty well against the Cowboys. You know, there were a lot of things missed in that game, but overall, he was pretty damn good. He was the highest rated PFF player against the Cowboys in the game, if you recall. I thought he was, you know, outstanding as a runner in that game for sure. And then yesterday was, you know, another one of those, for the lack of a better description. And maybe I will get a little bit hyperbolic, but that's a masterpiece yesterday. Yeah, there are a couple of throws he'd like to have back, the high one to Ertz, the one where he misses Noah Brown, gets him for an 11-yard gain, but probably if he leads him inside the field rather than outside the field, it's probably a touchdown. There's probably a sack of the two that he took that he probably didn't want to take and could have gotten out of, but, you know, back to a ridiculous, right? A ridiculous completion percentage number, 83.3%, three touchdowns, one pick, two sacks, 81.5 QBR. You know, his best QBR game since the Giant game, which was, keep in mind, two games after the injury, was his number one QBR game of the season, was the second Giant game in the Meadowlands. There was something else I wanted to play for you guys because Phil Mathis yesterday was inactive. It was a bit of a surprise. They activated Carl Davis, who they had signed to the practice squad maybe like a month ago, something like that. And they brought him up. He's a veteran defensive tackle, and they sat Phil Mathis. Phil Mathis has had a couple of decent games. He did not play well last week, even though he had that punt block. But here is what Quinn said about a healthy scratch on another one of Ron Rivera's high draft picks.
What happened with Mathis today?
We elevated Carl, and so just in the spirit of competition. So Carl Davis been working at it hard, and so they'd kind of been battling, you know, as we're going through for practice reps and where we're going. So it was just, for me, a coaching decision just to give Carl a shot, big square inside, and with Tony and the line coach and Bill and everybody else here, I know they know how to run the ball. And so we thought we'd give Carl a good go at that. He's been working at it hard, so we've, you know, had this competition really going internally on, and so that nothing more than that.
Okay. They released Emmanuel Forbes on Saturday. All right, so that was another big contribution to Ron's ring that he will get somewhere down the road. And Phil Mathis, who was a second-round selection during the Rivera era, just was a healthy scratch after playing a lot of snaps this year. Last week he struggled. I think maybe the week before that was, or maybe it was two games before that, he had struggled a little bit. You know, there were moments certainly earlier in the season where Phil Mathis was noticeable, sometimes as a pass rusher more than a run stopper. But I think that's just a bit of a sign there. You called up Carl Davis, okay, a longtime veteran player that you signed to the practice squad. They wanted something else interior-wise, and it looks like Phil right now is the guy that, you know, if we come back in the New Orleans game and Carl Davis isn't active, I'd be surprised. I can't tell you how many snaps. Well, I can tell you how many snaps
I got those numbers for you if you want them.
What'd you say?
I got those numbers for you. He played 14 snaps.
Yeah.
Five of those were run plays. Nine of those were pass plays.
Well, I mean, they stopped running the football.
They stopped running the football. But he played 14. He actually graded out the highest of any commander. He only played 14 snaps. Usually like to get 20 snaps.
He graded out defensively as the number one defender?
Yeah, he graded out 75.2.
Guess what? Phil, barring an injury, is going to be inactive against New Orleans, too. That's my prediction. That's a weird, healthy scratch. I'm not saying Phil Mathis has been playing great, but Phil Mathis has actually at times shown a bit of pass rush ability from that interior spot. But I think that, look, you got to be a better run-stopping team. That is 100% true. You have to be a better run-stopping team. And Mathis probably considered to be the weak spot in the run defense. Not terrible, I don't think, as a pass rusher at times. But if Carl Davis graded out, as you just said, where was it on run versus pass rush?
Run defense, he graded out 63.9. Pass rush was 72.7.
Okay. Just go back and see what Phil Mathis did against Dallas. Because I thought that was a rough game for him, as it was the defensive front and the O-line in particular. They just kind of got handled.
Well, I tweeted this out yesterday. I can give you every single grade for Phil Mathis this year. None of them were as high as what Carl Davis did against Dallas. It was his worst grade. He graded out 29.7. He was 30.1 against Philadelphia the week before. So that's back-to-back.
Last week was Phil Mathis' worst PFF game of the year?
PFF. And admittedly, PFF
is not
gospel.
And Philly the week before that?
Yes, and Philly the week before that. Yeah.
Okay. He may not... Again, Carl Davis, remember, was in Dallas. So Quinn was familiar with him. They signed him to the practice squad last year. So he had a chance to see Davis as a run stopper. And by the way, in some ways, that is comforting in that they recognized yesterday you had to stop the run. Fortunately, they weren't in position where they were forced to stop the run because the game got out of hand so quickly because of the turnovers and because of Tennessee's inability to stop Washington on offense. But when you get back from the break, you know, you're going to have to play a New Orleans team that's got, you know, Alvin Kamara in the backfield. Then obviously you got to face the Eagles, big time rush offense. Atlanta, very capable of running the football. Yeah, I wonder if, like, just Rico Dowdle having the best game or one of the best games of the season last week alarmed them even further about their run defense. Prediction, Phil Mathis inactive against the Saints, barring injuries. Lastly, Emmanuel Forbes became number four, as in the fourth first-round pick. Not with this team anymore. Chase Young in New Orleans. Jamin Davis got signed by somebody to somebody's practice squad I saw over the weekend. Jahan Dotson in Philadelphia. And now Emmanuel Forbes. Remember they were actually on the phone trying to trade up? I will tell you, and I saw a lot of that tweeted out, I'm pretty sure it was not to trade up for Emmanuel Forbes. I do think they understood that they were going to be able to get Forbes where they were. The trade-up in that 23 draft, I believe, was for Lucas Van Ness. I think if they had traded up into that Pittsburgh spot a couple of spots ahead, which was New England's spot, I think that they would have taken Chase Young's replacement in that draft and cut Chase Young before the 23 season began, or tried to trade him, which they did, remember, during that offseason. I don't think it was to take Emmanuel Forbes even higher. But, you know, wow. I mean, all-time I mean, there have been plenty of other teams. You look at draft histories, there are lots of teams that have had first-round failures for multiple years in a row. It happens in the draft. But just the idea that he mentioned to Keim before the season started last year, that if he leaves the new regime with their future starting quarterback in Sam Howell, and 40 out of the 53 players that leads them to a Super Bowl, send me my ring. Whew. Detached. Again, I've said this many times, I don't blame him for everything. He was put in a position that only Snyder would put you in, and then asked him to do a lot more under a lot of ugly circumstances. But drafting, not Riverboat's thing. That's for sure. All right. Ben Standing next.